DW Africa Link. Providing justice and hope to millions of innocent victims of atrocities across the world. That's what the International Criminal Court, the ICC, pledges to continue after US President Donald Trump imposed sanctions on its personnel earlier this month. Trump argued that the ICC, quote, abused its power by issuing baseless arrest warrants targeting Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and former Minister of Defense Yoav Gallant. The ICC also issued a warrant for Hamas military leader Ibrahim al-Masri for alleged crimes against humanity and war crimes committed in Israel. Hamas recently confirmed that al-Masri had been killed last year in an Israeli attack in Gaza. So what happens when a certain US president takes aim at an international court meant to serve justice? And what impact could such a move have on Africa? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Trump's order sanctions employees and supporters of the court involved in investigations, indictments, or arrest warrants against U.S. personnel or allies, such as Israel. According to the order, assets are to be frozen, and U.S. persons and companies are prohibited from financial and economic transactions with them. Critics suggest that the sanctions undermine the ICC and its investigations into war crimes and crimes against humanity across the world, including those committed against women and children. The ICC's investigations into African leaders have been controversial, and Trump's actions could embolden those who oppose the court's involvement in their countries. Some experts believe that leaders like Kenya's President William Ruto, who has had past entanglements with the ICC, could have more at stake. Let's unpack this with the help of Chris Kamau-Weweru, a seasoned legal expert with years of experience. Also joining from Nairobi is our very own correspondent, Andrew Wasike, who has extensively covered ICC cases and many other related topics. So, Chris, how would you describe this showdown between Trump and the ICC? Is it more about justice or power? What's going on, in your opinion?
Thank you for having me on the show. To your question, I really believe it's about power. You have to put the actions he's undertaking right now under the framework that the United States of America has never been subject to the Rome Statute that established the ICC. In fact, there is an act that was passed in 2002 called the American Service Members Protection Act, which is also known as the Hague Invasion Act, that essentially authorizes the U.S. president to use all means necessary to free members of the U.S. military and covered allied persons. These covered allied persons are essentially military personnel, officials, and persons working for or on behalf of a government of a member of NATO or a major non-NATO ally, which I believe Kenya is as well. But essentially, Trump has been doing this. I believe in 2020, he issued economic sanctions to Fatou Bensouda, who was the immediate former ICC prosecutor, and other members of that court for investigating war crimes or potential war crimes in Afghanistan when the U.S. Military was there. So it's not a first for Trump. It's about power. It's about them projecting that power as the sole policeman of the world, so to speak.
Right. So in a sense, you're suggesting that there is nothing illegal about that?
Not really, because you see, from their point of view, as Americans, the law authorizes them to do so. But of course, if you look at it from an international law perspective, of course, it's very wrong. It's illegal. Why should other countries essentially be subject to laws that they themselves are not subject to?
It is tricky, isn't it? Because, you know, on the other hand, the U.S. is not signatory to the ICC. So does that make sense then that they feel that it should not come after them or their allies?
It doesn't make sense, of course. But that's the world we are living in. unfortunately. The reason they are not subject to the ICC essentially is there's been a dichotomy between them and what they believe or they perceive they should be doing. How do I explain this? You have to look at it from the background that the US has been involved in a lot of military actions from, I believe, every century since they got their independence in 1779.
Mm.
So if you go through all of those acts they have committed in other countries, if they, for instance, say we shall be subject to the ICC, I think that will be opening a Pandora's box for them and their military personnel. And that's why I believe they have never signed the ICC statute. And I do not believe they are ever going to sign the ICC statute because there are so many atrocities or war crimes or crimes their personnel commit, and they do not want to be subject to that same jurisdiction, which now raises the other question. Then why should the rest of the world be subject to the same?
Yeah, really. Why should the rest of the world be subject to the same? And while you're answering that, I want you to take a step back to very briefly somehow tell us why the ICC was set up in the first place.
The ICC was set up essentially to try crimes where states are unable or unwilling to do so, sometimes due to a lack of capacity or there is a lot of political interference or the judicial systems in those particular states are not felt to be impartial or cannot deliver justice. That's one of the many reasons the ICC was set up, to ensure that these crimes are investigated and justice is seen to be done and is actually done.
Now, before I digress, I'm sure Andrew Asike, just like me, you've enjoyed this sort of snap history lesson from Kamau, trying to sort of bring this all together for us. But the question that we're asking in all of this is, you know, why should Africans care about this? And it takes me to you, Andrew. What's the word on the street in Kenya, especially with people knowing that Trump has sanctioned the ICC? Are people paying attention to this? And what are they saying?
In Kenya, the recent sanctions imposed by President Trump on ICC have actually sparked a lot of discussion, both in everyday conversations and also across social media platforms, because, you know, many Kenyans are always on X, on Facebook, just on social media. Given the historical context, because us as Kenyans, we have had a sitting president being taken to the ICC, and also our current president, President William Ruto, was taken to the ICC where they faced charges. So many Kenyans are drawing parallels and expressing concerns about the implications of such actions. So I would say this development has kind of rekindled broader debates about accountability. Many Kenyans are calling for African leaders to be held responsible for their actions. And to sum it up, it has become sort of a focal point for discussions on justice and governance, not only here in Kenya, but across the continent.
Huh. It's interesting, isn't it? Because on the one hand, as you say, some are worried that these sanctions on the ICC or the US sanctions on the ICC could prevent, you know, what some people call corruption by some of their leaders in Africa, that they would go scot-free. But on the other hand, many Africans have also complained that the ICC has been only coming after their leaders. So it's a bit of a mixed reaction thing on the ground, isn't it?
It is a mixed reaction because many Africans feel like the court has always been biased, because most of the people who have been charged in recent times at the ICC have been Africans, be it somebody in West Africa, here in East Africa, or just anywhere around Africa. But whenever anything happens outside the continent, it will never be featured by the ICC. They will never point a finger, or maybe they'll just issue statements. They'll never issue an arrest warrant or say, you know, this person should come to the ICC to face some charges. So Africans have always felt like it's a biased court that targets only African leaders.
Right. And you know, you've covered ICC cases before. Looking at this current situation, how does this clash compare to the court's past challenges, especially with African leaders?
You know, President Trump kind of has introduced a new dimension into this, because I was listening to some analysts who are saying it stems from the court's issuance of arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and also I think the defense minister. So now we are seeing something new. You know, the court decided to touch other global leaders. You know, now it's no longer African, not just Africans. And immediately we are seeing the ripple effect. I doubt many Africans expected such to happen, but it's something very, very new. It's a Trump has opened a dimension that we have not seen in recent dates.
Right. So, Chris, it's a big deal no matter how you look at it. A court that is supposed to bring justice, you know, around the world, is now being sanctioned by U.S. President Donald Trump. How do you think Trump's actions could affect the ICC's credibility, particularly in Africa?
The thing is, ICC's credibility has been on the wane for a while in Africa. That's the honest truth, because most of the warrants and indictments and actual convictions have been focused on African leaders. The former Sudanese president, al-Bashir, had a warrant of arrest issued against him. I remember there was a clamor between different African states in regards to whether they will arrest him or not whenever he visits their countries, or for the African states that were members of the Rome Statute. And I believe he visited Kenya a few times, but we did not exercise that authority or that power and have him arrested. You can look at Uhuru and Ruto locally, who are both indicted and were actually tried in the courts. For, I think, Uhuru, the charges were not proven. And for Ruto, I believe the charges were withdrawn. Then you have the likes of Pierre Bamba, you have the likes of Thomas Lubanga, you have the likes of Dominic Ongwen, who was a child soldier in Uganda in the Lord's Resistance Army. And he was convicted, I believe, for crimes against humanity, war crimes, rather. So, of course, the fact that the U.S. can use the Hague Invasion Act to essentially free members or their allies that they believe should not be subject to this court. Because remember, this act gives that power or that responsibility to the president. I believe the act to send American troops to war is exercised by Congress. It's not the responsibility of the president. But in this act, that power to get personnel is exercised by Trump or the substantive president at that point in time. Of course, the credibility of ICC will be short or will be even lower if the ICC actually decides to go after this person. Because I'm very sure the arrest warrants or the indictments were against both Israeli leaders and Hamas leaders. I'm very sure Trump will not save the Hamas leaders.
So I'm trying to think worst case scenario here. If this is going to, as you guys both are alluding to, that it could affect the credibility and the strength of the ICC court, what's to stop other countries from pulling out of the ICC, Chris? Is it that easy to do? If it is, what's to stop countries from doing that?
All of these things depend with the law of that country. Kenya is a dualist system. What a dualist system essentially means is there's a money system and a dualist system. What a money system essentially means is when international act is ratified by your representative, say in the UN, it automatically becomes a part of the law, of the country's law. But a dualist system essentially means is as much as the ambassador or the high commissioner ratifies that that law in the UN or World Health Organization or whatever international agency or entity, you still have to take it to your legislature and pass it at that point. So in regards to African countries or countries seeing their double standards, there was a push, I think, a few years back where Kenya tried to withdraw from the ICC. But of course, it was met with strong resistance What you have to remember is ICC was put in place to cure an illness. And the illness was essentially the inability of the system or judiciary or the lack of political will to actually try some of these suspects for the crimes they had committed during the 2007 and 2008 period, when we were just after we had our election.
Essentially, you're suggesting that it's not easy, or it's not going to be easy for many African countries to pull out of the ICC if they wanted to.
It depends with the countries, the laws they have in their books.
Right.
There are some countries where pulling out is as simple as the parliament just repealing the law that actually ratified that act. There's some countries where it takes a few steps for them to do so. Because in Kenya, it's a bit hard for you to do because you would need the whole of parliament to do so. And that's why I believe that previous attempt to have us withdraw from ICC failed. And you have to remember as well, the other repercussions that come with us or a country refusing to fall under the jurisdiction of the ICC, which includes economic sanctions, or you can find that there are countries or entities that might refuse to interact with that particular member state because they do not believe they are adhering to particular human rights, so to speak.
Okay. Wow. It's quite an interesting situation, isn't it? Andrew, as you've said already, I mean, Kenya is one of the countries that have experienced the ICC. Do you think Kenya's past ICC experience has changed how its leaders view the court today?
I'll say definitely, because its interactions with the ICC has undoubtedly influenced its leaders' perspectives. Here I'm talking about the current president, William Ruto, who has also been threatened by Kenyans that he will be taken to the ICC if he does not handle the situations to do with the abductions and all that. And this has kind of made him tone down, and he has come up with the police force to investigate this. He has come up with policies, you know. So it has sort of influence. So it's not just about Ruto. That is why Kenyans maybe have got this change of heart when it comes to the ICC. Because remember, this also touched on Kenyatta. So I would say that it has fostered a sense of skepticism among some Kenyan leaders and African leaders. So they know that you can't be held accountable for what you do. And also African leaders now have seen that the ICC's impartiality and its role in international justice is not like Kenyans or Africans used to think, you know, because now with them targeting top leaders from across the continent, it shows that it has restored some faith in the court.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, right. No doubt, though, Chris, that this current clash between Trump and the ICC could embolden African leaders who've previously called the ICC bias, right? This is those leaders are going to jump at this and say, yes, finally, won't they?
I'm sure they're jumping at the bit to actually call out the hypocrisy, because the double standards are very clear. It cannot be seen that the actions of one country are right and the actions of another are wrong, depending on what part of the hemisphere they are in. In my view, the Western world really needs to implore on the United States, because, and other members, and by other members I mean Israel, to essentially do the right thing and have them be subject to the Rome Statute. And I know that is a very idealistic way of thinking about these things. Until they also decide to fall under the remit of the ICC, I mean, they will not have any moral authority to speak about the ICC not being biased. And there have been many calls by African leaders who essentially state that the ICC is Eurocentric, which is true. I mean, it's based in Holland, at The Hague. It sits at The Hague. Most of the crimes they purport to go after are crimes that have been committed in Africa. And until the 2010 Kampala conference, when they now added crimes of aggression, most of the crimes they stated were subject to the ICC, essentially genocide crimes against humanity and war crimes, were essentially all committed in Africa or around Africa. So when they added crimes of aggression, that now put into play what other states will do by invading other countries and essentially taking their land.
So just to be clear, based on your expertise, studying this, researching this and all, does it come clear to you that the ICC overall has been biased until today?
Yes, in my view, initially it was biased, but the current prosecutor, Karim Khan, and of course the addition of crimes of aggression as part of the ICC's mandate has actually emboldened and increased the jurisdiction of the court. And that is why I believe right now there's an outstanding warrant for Vladimir Putin for his actions against Ukraine, which I believe is a step in the right direction. And of course, the outstanding warrants against Israel and Israeli and Hamas leaders. But of course, until the U.S. Is also subject to the same jurisdiction and they start practicing what they preach, I'm afraid it's a losing battle in regards to the credibility.
I mean, I could go on and on with this discussion. Pretty interesting about, you know, what really is international law? Is there international law and is there U.S. law? Can one country just go against what is seen as international law? I am not sure what it is anymore. But Andrew, these are some of the questions that Kenyans have been asking themselves also. What do they expect to happen now in terms of, you know, what's going on, the sanctions and ICC, and how they feel it could impact them in any way?
Definitely. Just like I said before, the perception of the ICC among Kenyans is sort of nuanced. While some view the court as a necessary institution for ensuring justice, especially in cases where local mechanisms fail, others see it as an instrument influenced by powerful nations to further their interests. So I would say the recent sanctions imposed by President Trump have been a wake-up call here for Kenyans, because now I feel like Kenyans will have more faith in the court, and they will feel like if everything else fails, if we try to hold these people accountable and we tell them we will go to the ICC, if Vladimir Putin can arrest warrants at the ICC, if other global leaders can have arrest warrants, then you will also go and face justice at the ICC. I think this will change Kenyans' perspectives, and going forward, definitely, I think this is has given a lifeline to the court.
Chris, you have the final words here, but is the ICC weakened now or not in terms of taking on more cases and issuing justice?
I do not believe the ICC is weakened at all. I just believe it lacks credibility. The thing is, the credibility in itself essentially erodes the trust someone will have in that institution. And it's a gradual process. But still, it's still that court still can exercise the mandate and jurisdiction it still has, regardless of what you say about it. We'll just wait and see. Ultimately, all of this is we are predicting, and we are trying to see where the world will be in a few years or so.
Yeah, you and me both, waiting to see what kind of world we will be living in the coming, what, days, weeks, months, because things are changing quite rapidly. I've enjoyed this discussion. It's a discussion that could go on for even longer, but we'll wrap it up now. Thank you very much, Chris Kamau-Waweru, seasoned legal expert with years of experience on matters like these, and that has been clear for all to hear. Also, our correspondent on the ground, Andrew Wasike in Nairobi, Kenya. He's been covering ICC cases and other related topics. Thank you very much, guys, for all your contributions and insights.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Trump's recent actions against the ICC pose a significant challenge to the international legal order and have ignited a global debate about the U.S.'s role in international justice. The potential consequences of these actions are far-reaching, with implications for the ICC's ability to prosecute war crimes and crimes against humanity, and for the relationship between the US and Africa. Now, these developments are not just news, but potential game changers in the international justice landscape. So, what do you think about these significant developments? We value your perspective and encourage you to share your thoughts with us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. You can also listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. And don't forget to click follow and subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel to stay updated. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW, made for minds.